This extract contains references to the convicted paedophile Eamon Cook, owner of Radio Dublin. Some listeners may find this content upsetting. If you need support, contact www.oneinfour.ie or phone Dublin 662 4070.
And your time there, November 87, it was T-minus 13 months to shutdown of the pirates. And you say that you were very much aware of the, you know, the way things were changing, the way things were going. And you were looking to the future and employment in radio. So in Liberty 104, were you readying yourself for employment in the soon-to-be new stations that were coming?
I will. I have to tell you, Martin Block, the poor guy, I really had his ears worn down with telephone calls. I knew at the time when I was working in Liberty 104 that, you know, the radio stations had were closing down, or the license applications were getting ready to for the stations to come on air. And I remember at the time, I remember that Martin Block was a name that I knew from the Q102 days. So I knew that he was involved in the consortium, or one of the consortiums. So I used to send Martin Block quite regular demo tapes of me. I used to contact him regularly. And fair dues to Martin, he listened to me and said, "Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Kieran. You'll be in contact." And that was it. So I had my eyes on the first commercial radio station in Ireland. But how I actually got the job is totally something totally different, which I can tell you in a moment. But I was aware of that, okay. But before the commercial stations, we had a temporary radio station on in Dublin, which to me was a stepping stone to where I wanted to go. And the stepping stone was the temporary license station that was run by RT, and it was called Millennium 88 FM. So don't forget, it was 87 when I joined Liberty 104. And then when I heard that RTE were starting their station called Millennium Radio 88 FM, as it turned out, it came on the air in March of that year. It didn't come on in January. Typical RTE style, I couldn't do it. It was on 88 FM on the frequency. So as far as I know, I think that would have happened when the Pirates, I think, had closed. The Pirates had closed at that stage, hadn't they?
So 88, the Pirates were still on to December 31st, 88. And but they started late for the millennium year, 5 months late or whatever, or 3 months late into the millennium year. And then they ran it and kept running it beyond 88 into 89, because with the shutdowns, there was no radio on. So Millennium got an extension into 89.
Yeah, you're correct. That's right. Yeah, it did get an extension. I remember at the time that, working in Millennium Radio, if there's anything, if you want me, just you can ask me any questions you want regarding Millennium Radio. But for me anyway, I was lucky. Again, I was one of those lucky people, because there was a gentleman by the name of Louis Hogan, works in RT. I know I mentioned Martin Block, but I was actually bending the ear of a lot of people. So I was contacting Louis Hogan and RTE because I wanted to get a job on legal radio. Whether it was RTE or whether it was commercial radio, either or, I didn't mind. So I came back to Dublin. My one plan was to get working in legal, commercial radio, or legal radio, because that's what I wanted. So when I was contacting RTE, I contacted a guy called Louis Hogan in RTE, and Louis Hogan was involved in 2FM at the time. And again, I sent him loads of demo tapes. I contacted him and so forth. And as it turned out, Louis Hogan contacted me out of the blue and said, "Look, we have a radio station starting in," it was March 1988. That's when it happened, when Millennium Radio came on. And Louis Hogan contacted me about a month beforehand, and he said to me, "Would you like to be involved in a station?" And I thought, yeah, that's fantastic. I was quite happy. This now for me was a big, big, big move, Brian, because I was going from living the dream of managing a station, looking after the music, then actually working on legal radio. So for the very first time in my life, I was getting a paycheck. And for the very first time in my life, I had to sign on and get a PPS number. So can you imagine me walking into the employment exchange, as I had to do in Nutgrove Shopping Centre?
Where have you been? You were off in another country, effectively.
Well, no, the guy said to me, okay, you're getting a PPS number. What have you done since you left school? And I said to him, honestly, I said, I've been working in radio. I've been getting paid in radio and working in pirate radio and I've been getting paid. That's why I haven't signed on, why I haven't needed it. And he looked at me and said, well, that's fine. That's fair enough. Because I hadn't been signing on, taking the dole and getting paid in pirate radio at the same time. It wasn't an issue. But it was quite interesting that from the time I left school, 1988, was the very first year that I got a sort of a PPS number and got working legally in tax office. But anyways, my first job, legal job, working in legal radio, and it involved the position that I had, the official position was General Assistant, which is a wonderful name, General Assistant for Millennium Radio. That means I had the job of making the coffee, which is great. I got the job of meeting the people. It had a counter there. You could meet public coming in playing requests. You could answer the phone. I was looking after commercials. So what happened was RTE radio sales would send down all the commercials via courier by cart. And I would make sure that the carts were all loaded correctly. The right ads were there. The old ads were taken out. And I made sure that everything worked out perfectly. So I was basically the liaison between RTE radio sales in Donnybrook and the GPO arcade in Dublin where the station was located. But yeah, it was a good experience. And my first and of course, I got a chance to do some broadcasting as well, because they would send me out to do Vox Pops. So really interesting things like, you know, what do you think of Millennium Radio? What's Millennium Radio? What do you think of the Millennium Radio? Or any kind of topic about Dublin, I would get a chance to do the Vox Pops and then go back and edit them on real RTE broadcasting equipment. And doing, we used to do tape editing. Nowadays, you just go to Cool Edit Pro or whatever, and you cut out the bits and you take what you want on the screen. I used to physically cut the tape, splice it together. So it was a case of splicing and editing. It was really, really time-consuming and tedious. But that's the way we used to do it then. Splice the tape, put it together. So when you listen to an interview, you heard my voice, you heard the other person's, you didn't hear the rattle of the microphone between. It was any noise was all put out, all that sort of stuff. So that's what I did with Millennium. And of course, I got a chance to get a copy of all the Millennium Radio jingles, which I still have, studio quality from the States. And of course, being a person who was an anorak as I was, I love the jingles and I've recorded them all. And of course, all the people who worked in Millennium Radio, like Robbie Irwin and so forth, had a good radio background as well. And we had a sort of camaraderie when it came to radio.
If they were to do Millennium today, it would be all the talent that's in RTE who's currently not on air. They'd have a home to a bit like RTE Gold, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit like RTE Gold. Yes, yes, yeah. It was really good. I had, as I said to you, we had two Millennium cars. They gave us two Ford Fiestas. They were emblazoned with the Millennium Radio logo on the front and on the back and on the side. And literally, I had a key, and the key was to the petrol station in Donnybrook in RTE and Montrose. There's a petrol, no, you probably don't know this, it was a little petrol station behind RTE. And literally all the staff vehicles drive in and you simply just hook up and you put your key in and you just fill up in petrol and drive away.
It also, that station existed in the interregnum between the pirate era and the licensed legal era. So at a certain point in time, it was one of the only other than Radio 2 and Radio 1 and Radio na Gaeltacht are the only station really on the air in the capital.
That's right. Yeah, when the pirate stations, I call them, the main super pirates, they closed down in December 88. Am I correct on that?
December 30th, 88. Yeah.
That's right. So on the 1st of January 89, then, the only station on the dial apart from RT2FM or Radio 2 as it was at the time was Millennium Radio. And Millennium got an extension rather grudgingly, I believe. It was a post office or the Minister of Communications who gave the extension. And it wasn't given easily. It was a bit like, yeah, okay, right. Yeah, we'll give it to you. They didn't rush out about it. I remember at the time we all thought, okay, come the end of the pirate stations were finishing and we were sort of due to finish as well, if I can remember correctly now.
It was the 1000th anniversary of the founding of the city. So they called 1988 the millennium. And for the year of 88, you were to be on air, but you missed the first 3 months and then they got an extension, not because you missed the first 3 months, but because there was a vacuum.
That's right, yeah. actually, yeah, it wasn't on the, it was March, the station came on the air in March 88. The Super Pirates and all the unlicensed stations, when the bill came in, closed in December of 88. And then in January 89, then, of course, we got our extension there. But as I said, it was actually touch and go because essentially they didn't really want us. And there's a little bit of jealousy as well, if I can be very honest about it. The people in Radio 2 didn't like the idea that there was this branch of RTE that was doing its own thing in a GPO arcade and broadcasting out. Now, I have to tell you, Brian, I loved it. And you know why I loved it? Because when I worked in Millennium Radio, one of the jobs I had was to ring through to the control center in RTE and say, look, hey, guys, we're going off the air and I get ready to switch this over to 2FM. And like, I had this job of talking to the guys who had the power to switch the channels. And literally, they did the click and they switched over 98. And in the morning time, I had to make sure, that the guys in the switch room knew that Millennium was coming on to switch it back from 2FM to ourselves. But I used to say to the guy, look, we bring the audio up a little bit higher. Just bring us a little bit higher there. Bring the audio, but I used to make sure that the audio was high. So I loved that. From that point of view, it was great. I really, really loved it. But there was a bit of jealousy there. I well remember who came into us there. Let me just think. I remember somebody from RTE coming down just as a matter of interest to see, what does it look like? How do you do it? What do you do? And I said, well, this is what we do. And I told him, like, we do our editing here. And he said, oh, we can't do that. We're not allowed to do that in Donnybrook. We have to have an editing guy to do that. And I said, no, we do it here. I just edit my recordings here and do it. He says, you're lucky. He says, we can't do that in Donnybrook. The unions don't know that. We sort of broke the mold because the guys in Millennium Radio were playing the songs, whereas at the time in RT, it was fashionable for somebody to play the music for you and you did the speech as well. So it was interesting from that point of view.
So, yeah, this was 20 years after BBC Radio 1 and Tony Blackburn going from the Pirates to the BBC and playing his own records. 20 years later, RTE were going through the motions. Let me move to your appointment at Capital Radio. You had telegrammed Martin Block or whatever way you contact him in 1989, and you eventually you said you had the story about landing the job in Capital.
Yeah, I tell you, it was way before 89. I had Martin Block's ear pretty worn down, the poor guy. I say that now to this day. If he's listening to this recording, I'm sorry, Martin, but it was good. He gave me my first break on legal commercial radio. What happened was I kept sending him demo tapes and asked him, when is the station going to come on air and so forth. As it turned out, Brian, Capital Radio came on the air in, let me just think,
June 89, and it was in the 20s of the month.
Right, good, thank you for that. Yeah, so Millennium Radio closed in May 89, okay? So for me, it was a town very, very down point in my life in May 89. And the reason it was down was because everybody who worked in Millennium Radio all had RT to fall back on, except yours truly. I was the only outsider. So essentially everybody, Maxi, the likes of everybody, all got their jobs back in RTE. They were okay. I was left with nothing. I was offered a job in RTE radio sales, which in a way I probably should have taken it. It would have been a backdoor to something. But no, I didn't want to work in radio sales. Even it was doing ad scheduling, I wanted to work in radio, not radio sales. So I turned it down. So eventually I was like unemployed and without a job. But it wasn't very long because, as I said, Capital Radio came on the air. And I remember listening to Capital Radio coming on air and so forth. I didn't get the job on Capital. But here is the story. And again, you're probably the only person who's going to hear this story.
I'm the first, not the only.
Yes, this is not an exclusive I'm giving you. So I received a phone call. And who was at the other end of the phone? Only Martin Block. And Martin Block said to me, Kieran, do you know anything about sport? And I said, no, I haven't a clue. And he said, could you do sport? And I said, well, I'm not really into sport. I don't really know very much about sports. He says, Kieran, can you come in and do sport? He says, just, I'll give you the paper. I'll put the paper on it. Just read it. And I said to him, okay, because, you know, it was a chance to work on the very first legal commercial radio station on the roof of the Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. The two porter cabins, because they came on the air temporarily there until they got proper license in the ballast office. So in the city centre of Dublin. So I arrived there anyway, and Martin said to me, now there's your sports news. And he put the Irish Times down. He said, there you go, just read that. So that was my start on legal commercial radio. I literally winged it. I don't know anything about sport. I know nothing about sport. I bluffed my way through it. I'm sure I made mistakes. But to me, getting on air, listening to the jingle, reading news on a proper commercial radio station with full Optimod sound on FM quality 104.4, I loved it. And of course, I got to work in the station as well, be in the station full time, got to look after, hung around with some of the guys in production, got to help them during production as well. And then, of course, got various other jobs as well and was there when the station morphed from to Capital Radio to Rock 104 and eventually to FM 104. So it was an interesting time, but yeah, it was actually totally unexpected. My step into legal commercial radio was a way that I wasn't expecting, that I didn't want to do, but I did for the sake of doing it because it enabled me to do what I wanted to do. And I'm forever grateful again to Martin Block. I have to say thank you, Martin, for that.
Can I ask you, you're kind of picking up the step up into legal commercial radio, but like you had been in radio paid since 78 to 89 and had worked in the state broadcaster RTE and the networks in the Northeast. I would imagine that you were truly capable and able to open a microphone and talk and read that newspaper with the sport. That I'm kind of asking, the step up wasn't so much a step up in terms of your abilities, but just the legal standing and the cachet that might come with that.
Yeah, the legal standing, of course, of the fact of the radio station, the fact that I was getting paid, the fact that and this time I was paying stamps and PRSI and paying tax as well, that I was on the system. And also the fact that I was another first to my bow, because I was the first voice heard on Radio Carousel Dundalk. I was the first voice heard on Radio Carousel in Navan. And then I was involved in the first sort of, you know, the only Millennium station, the first RTE station outside of, like, Millennium Radio was the first thing that RTE did apart from 2FM, a new sort of radio station. I was involved in that. And then I was working on the very first commercial radio station ever in Ireland. So for me, it was a first as well, but it was a good thing to know. I was really happy that I was there because I was there at the very start. I'll give you one interesting example, Brian. I remember we were working on three porta cabins in the roof of the Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. And the porta cabins were in a sort of a square, if you can imagine, one porta cabin here, another porta cabin next to it, so there's a square in the middle. And I remember one evening I had typed up my sports and I was walking from one porta cabin to the other to do the sports, and it was lashing rain and the rain caught my script and the script started to drip and I was going, no, don't get wet. And I arrived at the studio and my script was really, really sort of wet and sodden, but I managed to do it. One of those funny things that just comes to mind when I was working there.
So I'd love to know your impressions from moving from the excitement years of pirate radio, that decade of 11 years from 78 to 88 and all that had happened, the comparison of working in that excitement, and you're one of the people who you point out you got paid every week. That wasn't the reason why you'd pointed out is everybody didn't get paid every week, obviously. But comparing that to the Capital Radio or Millennium kind of world, I imagine the excitement would be different from each of those worlds in a big dramatic way. What was the difference for you between those two worlds?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are, obviously, you know, Radio Rainbow was exciting, really, really exciting, because it was great. Pointside Radio was great. Radio Carousel and Avon was great. They were all exciting in their own way. And I'm sort of proud of the fact that I was first voice heard on the two radio carousels. Don't forget as well that when I was working in Radio Carousel Navan and in Dundalk at the time, I was getting paid. In Dublin, you had the likes of, say, Big D and Radio Dublin. Now, nobody ever got paid, to the best of my knowledge, in Radio Dublin. I never got a penny, never got paid once in Radio Dublin. The guys who were working in Big D didn't get paid. Nobody got paid. Like, Hugh Hardy actually paid me. So for me, it was a case of living my dream, getting paid and being able to survive on it, not having to go and get the dole because I was getting paid, making it very upfront. And the move to commercial radio and legal commercial radio was exciting for me. And throughout that, the main thread is that I loved radio and I loved talking to people on radio, and I just loved doing it. It was the love of doing it that kept me going, I think.
I'm hearing in that answer that you loved both of the worlds, but from maybe an Anorak listener's perspective, the regulated, formatted, and concentrated formatted commercial radio world sounded different to the formatted commercial pirates and the anarchy of the non-commercial pirates. Were the two worlds just progression in your career, or can you see that something changed in December 88 and radio became a little bit more staid and a little bit more ordinary?
Yeah, good question. For me, like, it's always been about radio, regardless of whether it's commercial or whether it was the pirate. I enjoyed the pirate. I really enjoyed it. I love managing station. I loved doing the free radio show. I loved working with people. I loved the transmission. I loved looking at the links. I loved looking at audio processing. I loved looking at antennas. I truly embraced radio no matter what. So I would be quite happy working in radio regardless. I mean, as I said to you, and I can probably go into another show about this another time, working in radio and working with people in radio can be two different things. Like, there are the love of radio and the love of loving doing what you're doing. And then there's the people that you have to work with, which are not always pleasant and not always the best people to work with. You're dealing with egos. Radio, by its very nature, is very egocentric. And people do tend to, I suppose, get above themselves and think that they're better than others and get a superiority complex. And there is, and there was, a lot of that, both in commercial and in pirate radio. And I always like to think that I tried to stay above that and just stayed true to the love of radio, and not to think that I was better and bigger and better than anybody else. But there were a lot of people throughout my life that were not friendly or helpful, or did as much as possible to make me feel uncomfortable in my position, if that would be the correct. Without sounding as though I don't have a chip on my shoulder or a regret. It's just an observation that I made, that there were some people who made it their business to make me feel as uncomfortable as possible to make them feel a bit better. But for me, I was quite happy. I didn't care less what they did, because I enjoyed radio and enjoyed doing what I was doing.
Understood. I would mention that you went on to work in Fresh FM, which is a spin-off of LMFM. Could I ask you a question about that? LMFM was for Louth and Meath, and many of the characters in Boyneside reappeared in LMFM, from Gavin Duffy through to Heady Eddie. But Fresh, how did that come about? It seemed to kind of broadcast off a Saggart transmitter into a lot of Dublin, even though it was a Louth and Meath licensed commercial station, had a sub-brand that was broadcasting. How did that come about?
As far as I understand it, the reason why Fresh FM came about was that LMFM was granted a license to broadcast. There were parts Meath franchise area that weren't being covered adequately with a radio signal in the south, sort of Meath area, so to speak, Meath Kildare area, that border. So as far as I know, LMFM were granted the license to have a sort of a transmitter, an opt-out transmitter, to broadcast from Saggart. And that transmitter was pointing northwest. So the idea was, it wasn't pointing towards Dublin, what I can remember. It definitely was pointing towards the target area, which was the Kildare Meath border area. So it was to do the South Meath Kildare border area. And as part of that, then they were granted a license that they could have it as an opt-out and call it a different name. So they just came up with the name Fresh 95.5 FM. They were an LMFM service. I can tell you their telephone number was 1850-222-955. That was their number. And I know that because I can see the sticker here. But they had a radio station in It was the station was based in Bracetown Business Park in Clonee. So we're driving out of Dublin and the old road before the motorway was built. On the right-hand side was Bracetown Business Park near Clonee. That's where the station was, an industrial estate. You drive in there and they had a lovely studio, fully professional studio, lovely equipment there, CD players all ready, you know, for playing. And again, this was an opt-out station. And it was actually something that was... I was quite at home at, because I had been well used to doing this kind of work in Carousel, but Dundalk. I had been doing it in Boyneside, in Kells.
With Kells, yeah.
And now I was doing it in Fresh FM, with LMFM in Dublin. And don't forget, of course, connection with LMFM, with Eddie being involved in that as well. We sort of had our pirate days connections as well, with the legal side of things. But yeah, that was in November. For the record there, if you want to take a note, it was November 1987 is when I joined the new station there and was based in Bracetown Prisons Park.
So, how long did it last?
Good question. Well, I actually, the job I was doing, it included, was compiling reading news. I was doing presentation of the station's breakfast show. And then what happened then, January 1998, the staff on Fresh 95 were put on notice and then the station closed later. I was let go, and that was my last radio gig, so to speak, before Premier FM. January 1998. That's what happened.
Okay. And Premier, of course, was a temporary licensed station from Harcourt Street, Harcourt.
Yeah, it was actually the Harcourt Hotel is where it broadcast from. So you can imagine now, that was actually 1998. So we were let go there, and that was it. So look, I looked at that stage and thought, that's fine. Look, I've had a good life. I've enjoyed radio. I've lived my dream. I've done what I wanted to do. I was really, really quite happy that, you know, I'm one of these people that if you have a dream for doing something, you go and live it, you pursue it, and you do it. And despite all the setbacks, and believe me, there were lots of setbacks that I haven't told you about. There were people who were very, very vindictive. People were very, very bitchy. People were very backbiting. People doing their best. People were doing things that were not in your interest, trying to discredit you. But I continued on, just rose my head above it, just did the job in hand, which was radio. And then what happened was April 1998 then, so it wasn't too long, I worked in... the newly established mobile phone network called Digifone. So I was working in the radio telephony department there. So essentially, I moved from radio to radio, but this time it was mobile phones. But in the radio front, that was the very first one of the first mobile phone licenses being granted in Ireland. So another first for me. So I was quite happy about that. But alongside that, then on the radio scene in 2002, then I was contacted by one of the owners of a station called Premier Radio. So Premier Radio is a solid gold format, and they started out as a pirate station in the 1980s, and they closed down and applied for temporary license. So eventually, that was in the 1980s. So eventually, then they were granted a 14 weekend Dublin City license in October 2004, and that's when I used my name, Stereo Steve. I should really mention that my real name is Kieran Murray. But when I was working on Radio Carousel, I was known as Kieran Murray. When I was working on Boyneside Radio, I was known as Kieran Murray. But when I was working on Capital Radio, I was known as Kieran Murray as well, doing the sports. But when I moved on to doing the beat on the street and doing the reports from the Jeep, I was given the name Stereo Steve. So that name stuck. So when I went on to Premier Radio then, I used the name Stereo Steve. So the show I did was the Stereo Steve Classic Chart Countdown. It was quite a mouthful, but that's what I did, and I did that from 2 to 5 Sunday afternoons, and I did that featuring a different chart every year. So that was really excellent for two reasons. That was, for me, it was me back in radio again. Secondly, I have a love of music, and I have loved all the music of all the decades that I've grown up in. So I got a chance to play a lot of the stuff from those years, dedicated years. The other person that I'm eternally grateful for is Derek Jones. Derek Jones very, very kindly would supply any of the audio that I would need for a certain year. All I had to do was say to him, "Look, I'm going to be doing 1962. So he luckily, true to form, I would say to him, look, I want the charts of March 1962. He would put the chart of March 1962 on a CD, and he would leave it for me in the studio, and it would come in, and it's all done, and it was perfectly done. So he really, really helped me. So yeah, that's an example of somebody who helps you along the way there.
And he'd done the same to me many a time since 1985 when I met him on Radio Valerie, a great man. You've been really gracious with your time. I've stolen a lot of it. I'm going to go for a final question. Big question, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
So not reflecting on your own career, but more the impact that radio had between 78 and 88 in particular, what impact do you think those pirates had on Ireland as a country?
You mean pre-commercial radio?
Pre-commercial radio, yeah. What impact did they have on media, on culture, on technology, on the economy? What was their impact?
I suppose I could sum it up as that it brought people together. Because when I was working on Radio Carousel in Navan, one of the years there we had the big snow and everybody was snowed in. And of course, nobody could go anywhere or do anything. The only thing they had was the radio. So they turned on the radio and I was that voice that everybody listened to. And it sort of brought people together. So I suppose, if anything, it brought people together. It also made a lot of individuals pretty rich and pretty lined a lot of people's pockets. Not everybody who worked in pirate radio got an equal bite of the cherry. Although, as I said to you, when I was working in Carousel, I made sure that everybody got paid. That wasn't the case all around. So some people got very, very rich off the back of it. Some people were used and just said, you know, to go on air, and because they wanted to do a little bit like me, they were young, they were naive and used and weren't paid as well. So it brought out the good and the not so good in people. But I suppose, as a general sum up, I'd say is that it brought people together. People became aware when all the stations were going on the air, the pirate radio stations. People were aware of their local station and aware of their local identity. But it also brought awake in some people the ability to make money and a new way to make money prior to the likes of Nova and Sunshine, where you had a local station on air. They could sell advertising and get people in. So it was also a way of making money also for people.
I did say final question. I'm going to sneak in one more. The current state of the broadcasting arena, what's your take on what's happening, be it Ireland, the UK, internationally? Where is radio at in 2020, in your take?
Yeah, my take on radio is, at the moment now, I think that possibly radio stations, as you and I know them, are probably going to become less important in people's lives going forward. And it's a sad thing. And the reason I think that is because people now, at the touch of a button, can switch on, can download an app on their mobile phone, and they can tune in to any radio station anywhere in the world. Something that when I was growing up, and probably when you were growing up as well, was unheard of. You can literally click a button and listen in to Kiss FM in New York or Los Angeles. One button and you're there, okay? So people's way of receiving radio is now through the internet and through their mobile devices. So it's less important, the idea of tuning into an FM frequency. So that's possibly the way I think it's going to go, that people will get their radio through the internet, and it'll be less unique to a city or to a town, but more to what people want to hear. And that's essentially the way I would see it probably going forward. Now, if I were a radio station, I would be concentrating on my online offering. I'd make sure that I have an app for people to download and try and get people buy in with people's download on the app as well, because radio as it is with just a broadcasting medium on FM is probably not going to be as important or as in your face as it was years ago. And I suppose when car radios, the manufacturers of car radios decided to make some changes to their receivers in cars, that's going to knock out a lot of people who listen to the radio in the morning. And besides, most people now can get their phones and just simply plug them into their car and listen to whatever they want on Spotify or YouTube Music. So they get their music without having to listen to the radio stations. So I wouldn't say it's the end of radio as such. I think it's just a different way of doing things. And the clever radio stations are the ones that adapt. Adapt or die is the important thing. And I would say always adapt. So whatever the new way that people are receiving their radio, adapt where possible.
Ciarán Murray, Stereo Steve. Thank you very much for your time today. It's gone dark while we've been talking, and you've been enlightening on your career and your thoughts on radio throughout those years. Thank you very much.
You promised I'd be able to say thank you to a few people at the end.
Yes, indeed. Please
okay.
do.
Right, so here is my list, okay? Now, a lot of people that I'm going to mention here may not agree with the names I'm quoting here, because I am one of these people that I treat people as I find them, okay? So the first name and the person I'm going to thank is Eamon Cook, the founder of Radio Dublin. He gave me my very first chance to broadcast on pirate radio, okay? So I know what went on in the background. I know he got charged with, charged with being a paedophile. He was in prison and so forth. But I can only judge him by me having met him. And I found him to be okay. I found him to be very good, very friendly, very affable. Having said that, of course, I probably wasn't his target audience at the time. So that probably meant that I was okay. If I'd have been female at the time and young, I probably would have had a different experience. The other person then, of course, as I mentioned, is the late Hugh Hardy. Hugh Hardy, of course, the founder of Radio Carousel Dundalk. He gave me my very first paid job in pirate radio. So I have to say thank you to him. He unfortunately has passed away. And thankfully, I got a chance to speak to him before he passed away as well. He just released his book. Eddie Caffrey, of course, I have to thank him as well. Eddie from Boyneside Radio Drogheda, have to thank him for the fun of Boyneside Radio and particularly for the fun of Radio Rainbow International Shortwave. I may never have got a chance of working on Nova, but I find that having been part of Radio Rainbow International and Shortwave, that I did the Nova of Shortwave, and I'm really, really happy and really proud of that. It was really, really good. The other person I want to thank is Sammy Prendergast, the guy who built all the antennas. He gave me the chance to return to work in Dublin, my home city, and I got a chance to work there. It was only for a year, but it was Liberty 104, great station. Louis Hogan, of course, thank him for RT Millennium Radio. That was my first job in legal radio. And then I also want to thank Martin Block, Capital 104 FM, the chance to work on Ireland's first legal commercial radio station. Then, of course, on a personal note, I've got Gwen Stevenson to thank for ESAT Digifone Ireland for the chance to work in a completely different medium. And then, lastly, we have Brendan, Paul and Walter, the guys from Premier FM. And they got a chance, they gave me the chance to come back to radio and do it again. So you can't say very much more than that. But I just want to say thank you to everybody at pirate.ie and to you, Brian, for giving me the opportunity. I don't think I've ever talked so much about my radio career to anybody, but a lot of what I've told you is just my own personal experience and wouldn't have been shared with anybody else, and they probably would never know it. But if anybody wants to contact me, feel free to look me up on Facebook, contact me or whatever. I'm more than happy to do that. I have sets of jingles that if anybody is interested in, I'll have no problem sending them out to anybody who may be interested. But thank you for that.
A million thanks.